Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Corey Hong, and I represent petitioner Lionel Bogel. This case asks, can a police report deport an LPR when it is the only basis to bring in deportable facts? The answer, according to the Supreme Court, the federal courts, and the BIA precedent, is no. The parties agree that these conviction documents alone do not have an admission, and they do not have a finding about how much marijuana Mr. Bogel had when he was convicted of Georgia's offense of possessing of more than 1 ounce of marijuana. Under Moncrief, the least of the act presumption requires us to presume that he possessed between 28.3 and 29.9 grams, which would be enough for the state court, but still not have any immigration consequences.
Counsel, your argument is that even if we go with the circumstances-specific approach, that there can't be any case, no matter what, where the police report alone is sufficient, right?
Well, definitely not this police report.
Okay, well, then let me ask you then about that. Because in this case, your client told the immigration judge, and I'm looking at 214 through 216 of the administrative record, that he was innocent because he didn't know there was marijuana in the car. And he said three or four times, I know there was marijuana in the car. I know marijuana was found in the car. I admit there was marijuana in the car. I just didn't know it was there. So when your client tells the IJ that what he's challenging is his intent, but not that there was marijuana in the car, the 3 pounds that the police report says that was recovered, even in that circumstance, the police report isn't alone enough on an issue where your client wasn't challenging that?
No, there are factual reasons and legal reasons as to why. And the factual reasons, the police report says that there was a small amount of leaves of marijuana found in the front of the car. It also says that there were 3 pounds found in the trunk of the car. His testimony at all times has been that it was a rental car, it wasn't his car, and he did not know about the marijuana in the trunk. Now, the prosecutor must have agreed with him because he was originally charged with possession with intent to distribute marijuana, and 3 pounds of marijuana would absolutely support that more serious trafficking offense.
And he eventually pled to an ounce or more. So that obviously wasn't the leaves on the console.
Well, it could be more. It could have been an ounce in the car, but it wasn't the 3 pounds. Whatever it was. And this is important because when the prosecutor took a look at the police report, it concluded that the 3 pounds was not enough because the prosecutor dismissed the more serious offense of possession for intent to distribute.
Well, but I mean, the prosecutor could have had many reasons for exercising that type of prosecutorial discretion that had nothing to do with the quantity, right?
Well, yes, Your Honor, but I think this goes back to the more important legal issues that police reports cannot be found to be the substitute for facts. Judge Kleinfeld explained that police reports have an important role in starting an investigation, but in criminal court, there isn't a single prosecutor who would simply give the jury a police report and expect a conviction.
But this isn't a criminal case, and if you have a circumstances-specific approach, it just strikes me you can't have a rule that you can never use the police report on an issue that the petitioner hasn't put in controversy. And the way I read the transcript, the petitioner put in controversy whether he was innocent, but he didn't put in controversy how much marijuana was in the car.
Well, Your Honor, Nijuan disagrees with you, with all due respect, in that it says that a police report the only documents that can be included under circumstances specific are those that are fundamentally fair, which it defines as, quote, procedures that give an alien a fair opportunity to dispute the key fact of deportability. The examples that have met this opportunity to dispute are stipulation at sentencing, a restitution order, which is also under Nijhawan, and under Fuentes, we have the PSR, a pre-sentencing report, where the person also has an opportunity to contest the facts as they're written. Examples that fall short of the Nijhawan standard are allegations of a complaint of dismissed counts. This was the situation in Fuentes. And in Fuentes, the allegations of those dismissed counts were not necessary to the conviction record rendered, so they could not be used to support the deportable count.
Is there any place in the record, counsel, where the petitioner put at issue the amount, where the petitioner claimed that the amount in the police report wasn't sufficient? I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Where the amount in the police report wasn't accurate, as opposed to, I had no idea that there was any marijuana in the car.
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that 214-215, when he denies all innocence, goes to the fact that he denied knowing the 3 pounds.
He denied knowing the 3 pounds, but he didn't argue that the 3 pounds wasn't there. Convicted of over an ounce.
Well, Your Honor, the two elements of possession are knowledge and control. And if he never had knowledge of the 3 pounds, he never had possession of it.
Well, he says, I was never guilty of anything. But he pled to possession of over an ounce. My point is that he wasn't putting into issue that it was 28.7 or 29.2. He was telling the immigration judge, I was totally innocent because I didn't know there was any marijuana in the car.
Well, Your Honor, and then here's the part, he denied it, which is different than Nijhawan. And also, where in Nijhawan, the person did not contest the amount of fraud that was in the restitution order. So we have both the prosecutor disagreed with the police report and Mr. Bogle himself disagreed. Olivas Matas is another case where this court, in a published decision, applied Nijhawan to a CIMT offense. And there they said a police report cannot be used under the circumstance-specific approach under Nijhawan because there the police reports weren't reliable. And that's where Judge Kleinfeld wrote in the additional concurrence about the police reports just not being a source for fact, ultimately because it does not account for the ways in which police reports are later amended and corrected and verified.
Could you address... I thought part of your argument is that we shouldn't be applying a circumstance-specific inquiry at all, and that under Medina, the law of the circuit commits us to a categorical approach. Could you address that?
Your Honor, it's a novel question. The court hasn't decided it one way or the other. The court has the authority to decide the categorical approach or the matter of Davey. Even the government in its brief acknowledged that the BIA was wrong to rely to Shepherd on police reports under the categorical approach, and that's true because Shepherd had established that years ago. So if the court decides that matter of Davies doesn't apply, it ends at the categorical approach and the police reports don't get in. But even if this court does decide to adopt matter of Davies, which it has the authority to do under Chevron, even under matter of Davey, the circumstance specific approach does not allow for police reports, and that's Fuentes and Nijhawan that counsel against that.
So you're not taking the position then that, well, I guess I'm just restating what you said. It's your view that whether to apply the categorical approach or the circumstance specific approach is an open question under circuit law?
Yes.
Okay.
But the fundamental flaw is apparent in both, in that the police reports can't be used under the categorical approach that's clearly established under Shepherd. And I would argue, given under Nijhawan and Fuentes and Olivas Matas, that Woods answered that police reports cannot also be used under the circumstance-specific approach. Another thing that's important about this police report that is not true in all states is that this police report is not accompanied by a verification by the police officer. It also was not incorporated into the complaint, which sometimes it is under state procedures. That indicia and that absence makes this even less reliable than it could be to other state reports. So Judge Bennett, your question, would all state police reports be excluded? I mean, there could be a situation where it's verified or attached to a complaint, but I would say given that that is absent here, this one absolutely is not.
Attorney Hong, I wondered if you have a position on whether or not the police report is complete. because there is indicia that there were photographs taken but not attached, that there are lab reports but not attached. So I wonder if, apart from some of the other verifications you've mentioned, do we have all that the police had to offer?
Your Honor, that is an excellent question. I would say the Fourth Circuit has said no. In Prudencio, in the Fourth Circuit, it says that you cannot confer the imperator of fact for precisely that reason, that the police reports are the start of investigation and do not allow for the other investigation and matters that are discovered. And I would say in this case in particular, it's significant that the prosecutor charged him with possession with intent to distribute, which if you look at the start of the police report, the only count mentioned is possession for intent to distribute at the first page of this report. And yet the prosecutor dismissed that count. I think the most reasonable inference is that either when the prosecution had a chance to investigate, they determined that the 3 pounds was either not true or not provable. And either way, that was not a sufficient fact for the criminal court, and it definitely can't come in the back door in immigration court. And if there are no further questions, may I reserve my remaining time?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kim?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is David Kim on behalf of the U.S. government. I'd like to start by focusing on the fact that Ms. Hong cast doubt on police reports in general and also cast doubt on this police report in particular. But I think it's important to keep in mind that this police report was used for a very limited purpose. Now, opposing counsel basically said that the circumstance-specific approach can apply here. And if we apply the circumstance-specific approach, we're not actually limited to a number of formal documents. We can actually look at something like a police report to get
counsel, could I just, I'm sorry, this is Judge Miller. Could I ask you to pause for just a moment before moving into the sure. circumstance-specific approach and address our decision in Medina, which seems yes. to be suggestive of a categorical approach here?
Yes, Your Honor. So the court in Medina purported to consider the personal use exception under the categorical approach, but the government's position is that it's not clear that Medina applied the categorical approach as it's now understood. Medina came down in 2005, so it predated Descamps and Mathis, which clarified the means elements distinction, holding that the categorical approach applied to the elements of a statute, not the means. Now, it's the government's position that the personal use exception is not an element. And so it's not necessarily true that the categorical approach would be applied to that exception now. And so it's very well possible that Medina, because it predated Nijuan Malouli and Matter of Davy, is somewhat stale.
But Medina, I mean, the language that the court used was not about means and elements. It was talking about whether, you know, the conviction in that case resulted from, you know, personal use less than 30 grams. And it said in answering that question, we're looking you know, just at the offense and the charging documents. So how does that not answer the question before us?
Well, because, Your Honor, when the court was considering the case at issue in Medina, at that point, it wasn't entirely clear that the categorical approach should be reserved for formal elements. Now, with regard to 1227A2BI, we do agree that in the main, the categorical approach should apply to that statute. But then the personal use exception is something different altogether. For that, the circumstance-specific approach can only apply. And, you know, there are several arguments for that. One argument is a textual, lexical argument. If you look at the exception, it reads, a single offense involving possession for one's own use of 30 grams or less of marijuana. Now, the statutory language is all important here. That the language of the exception, it's exceedingly narrow and fact-specific on its face. It doesn't refer to a common generic crime, but rather to a specific type of conduct committed on a specific number of occasions and involving a specific quantity of a specific substance, as the board found in Matter of Davy. Now, that practically calls for an inquiry into the facts. And so because of how the exception is spelled out, how it's formulated, it's a government's position that only the circumstances-specific approach would make sense if the categorical approach were instead used, that would lead to some irregular outcomes. For instance, the government did canvass the marijuana, the controlled substance possession status for all 50 states, and it found that 48 of the 50 state drug convictions would be categorically overbroad if the categorical approach were to be used to the personal use exception. In short, it would only cover the drug possession status of two states. Now, that would leave 1227A2BI with little, if any, meaningful application. And so because of that lexical approach, we would argue that the court must use a circumstance-specific approach in this case. In addition to that, moving on to whether substantial evidence supports the board's finding, under the circumstance-specific approach that Bogle possessed more than 30 grams of marijuana, the judge mentioned earlier that it wasn't in controversy whether there were 2.94 pounds of marijuana or not. Mr. Bogle never actually contested, never actually contradicted the officer's first-person statement as to that particular fact. Now, opposing counsel may say that the police report was affected by other deficiencies, but it doesn't matter. With regard to this particular fact, she didn't actually bring that into controversy. And so,
he did say a couple times, I think he said, the majority of the police report is not true. Another time he said it wasn't accurate. Why isn't that general attack on the accuracy of it sufficient?
So as we argue in our brief, it's a matter of the judge choosing to give more weight, a greater weight to the police report over his adversely credible testimony. Now, if you read the IJ's decision, the IJ in detail goes over why he found that Mr. Bogle was not credible. And for instance, on page 76 of the admin record, the IJ said that Mr. Bogle admitted he misled police officers by telling them he did not know the individual who gave him the backpack and he had met him at a club. Now, in fact, during his testimony, he said that he did know this individual. It was his friend Tyrese, and that Tyrese gave him this marijuana. In addition to that, the immigration just found that his testimony about the shipping boxes, these very small shipping boxes, was implausible. Now, these boxes are very small. They're 11 by 11 by 11 inches and 14 by 14 by 14 inches. Now, he claimed that the boxes were to help a family member move, but the immigration judge credibly found that this was implausible. And so we have to consider that the immigration judge was weighing the police report against the backdrop of Mr. Bogle's adversely credible testimony. And so, yes, while the immigration judge may not have any more documents other than the police report to go on, no case law actually says that police reports as a class can't be relied upon to find a defendant removable in that particular context. And so
this is Judge Person. There is a requirement that the evidence relied on, such as the police report, establish clear and convincing evidence, isn't there? You used the term earlier, greater weight, making me think you were more in line with the preponderance standard. Far more clear and convincing is the correct standard the police report should meet here, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, but as I did mention earlier, it's not the government's position that the police report has to be clear and convincing evidence with regard to every element of the state statute. It's the government's position that it only goes to this particular question of whether there was a certain specific quantity of the marijuana on Mr. Bogle's possession. And with regard to that very specific, very narrow fact, the police report actually is clear and convincing. There is no doubt as to the police report with regard to that particular fact, which is why it was fair for the immigration judge to rely on the police report with regard to that particular question.
Well,
and so, yes.
I just heard from your colleague on the other side that there is some doubt that resulted from prosecutorial discretion, even, that there was no charge in line with 3 pounds of marijuana, but more like 1 ounce. I'm struggling with how an untested police report can be use in a fundamentally fair and reliable way. Can you speak to that?
Yes, Your Honor. So with regard to, you know, Mr. Bogle's claim that he would have been charged with a more severe offense had 3 pounds of marijuana actually been found in the car, well, courts are loath to second-guess the exercise of prosecutorial discretion, Your Honor. There's a range of factors that might come into play, including the strength of the case, the general deterrence value, the government's enforcement priorities, the case's relationship to the government's overall enforcement plan. And so it's the government's position that while the petitioner may find it significant that a more severe offense wasn't charged, we really don't think that should be at issue with regard to this case. And so, yes, while this police report may not have been authenticated, we would note that 8 CFR 287.6A, which is the regulation in question requiring authentication, well, that was adopted after the regulation. That predated 8 USC 1229 AC3B, which is the statute that governs the admission of certain evidence. And moreover, Mr. Bogle's reliance on that particular regulation is misplaced because the police report was brought in not to show the existence of conviction, but simply as evidence relating to the equities of the case. And so that particular regulation, Your Honor, actually goes to whether or not a conviction exists. But here it's uncontested that the conviction did exist. And so that regulation is inapt. And so if the court does accept that substantial evidence does support the board's finding under the circumstance-specific approach, now that's all important, that Mr. Bogle possessed more than 30 grams of marijuana, then the question is whether the court can actually review the denial of cancellation. And it's the government's position that the court lacks jurisdiction to review that particular denial under USC 1252A2B. The sole test now, again, the sole test for the admission of evidence in immigration proceedings is whether it's probative and its admission fundamentally fair. The court does agree with that. But if the court does find that it can go ahead and actually review this discretionary decision, we would again point to that particular test. And we would point out that there's nothing to show that with regard to the crucial question of whether nearly 3 pounds of marijuana was found on Mr. Bogle's possession, well, there's no reason why the police court can't be admitted to that particular fact. And lastly, in light of the Supreme Court's recent decision in Barton, Mr. Bogle is not eligible for cancellation where he didn't satisfy 7 years of continuous residence after lawful admission. Now, the court had made clear in Nguyen, which postdated the immigration judge's decision, that the commission of an offense referred to when 1182A2 doesn't trigger the stop time rule if it isn't also a ground for removal. But as the government explained in footnote 27 of its brief, the agency had additional grounds sufficient to deny cancellation, namely credibility and the exercise of the agency's discretion. And given the fact that Nguyen was still then good law, the agency elected to focus its arguments on those grounds. Now, given that Barton is now a good law and has overturned Nguyen, counsel does think that it's appropriate to point out that the agency did provide a reasoned analysis as to Mr. Bogle's ineligibility for cancellation, and that analysis has been validated by Barton. Now, there are two separate grounds of inadmissibility. The first one is 1182A2AI2, which is the ground for controlled substance offenses. Now, the disposition of Mr. Bogle's Arizona offense, in contrast to his Georgia offense, doesn't change the fact that he admitted having committed acts constituting the essential elements of an offense under that particular ground. He was found in possession of approximately 5 pounds of marijuana. He knew that the bag contained marijuana, and he had agreed to hold the bag in exchange for money. So that is sufficient to meet that particular ground of inadmissibility. Now, in the alternative, Mr. Bogle is also statutorily ineligible because the facts underlying his Arizona offense established a reason to believe that he was involved in drug trafficking, making him inadmissible under that particular ground. And so, to sum, Mr. Bogle was convicted of an offense relating to a controlled substance, and the personal use exception doesn't extend so far as to cover him, where the record shows, and he doesn't dispute, that he was found in possession of almost 3 pounds of marijuana. And the government asked that the court focus on that particular fact, the fact of the 3 pounds of marijuana, and not on his intent or belief that he is innocent. Further, he isn't eligible for cancellation where his Arizona offense triggered the stop time rule and prevented him from meeting the continuous residence requirement. And in the alternative, the agency weighed the equity in this case and determined that it wouldn't grant cancellation as a matter of discretion, and that decision is not reviewable. In light of all the foregoing, the government asked that the court should deny the petition for review.
Thank you. Ms. Hahn, your rebuttal.
Thank you. I have 4 points. First, in answer to Judge Miller's question, at page 35 of the government's brief, the government lays out the citation to Malui and to the Solicitor General's brief that made it very clear that it was not weighing in on whether this particular ground should be subject to the circumstance-specific approach or deportability. So Medina very much seems to be fair game, especially because Malui was in 2015, well after Nijuan was decided, and the Supreme Court probably held off for a reason. Second point, my brother misspoke when he spoke about the shipping boxes and all of that matter. That had nothing to do with the Georgia police report. At AR 169, the IJ makes it very clear that the Arizona police report goes to the reason to believe standard, and that was what was analyzed in detail at the hearing. At page 214, 215, there are only 2 paragraphs where he was asked about the Georgia offense. He was never asked about the exact quantity, and that omission again goes, it's significant that the DHS cannot infer evidence that was never presented, even when the DHS had an opportunity to present it. The third point is related, is that because this is a deportable offense, that the DHS has a burden of proof. The government agreed to that in its brief, and it's significant that when there is a deportability ground, not the reason to believe, that there has to be sufficient evidence. Teixeira, matter of Teixeira, which is the BIA case. In that situation, LPR was convicted of offense of a possession of a weapon in a car. The BIA itself said that the conviction documents did not identify that weapon and rejected the use of a police report that clearly identified the weapon in this man's car as being a gun. The BIA said you can't go to police reports as a matter of fact when the DHS has a burden of proof. So the fourth point is that the government has yet to cite to any Supreme Court case, any federal court case, and even any BIA case that has ever allowed a police report to come in to a deportability ground, which is something that the DHS always has the burden to prove. Because there's also no fact in this case, there's no plea agreement, and actually on the evidence, which is at 650, or at the statement of the sentencing report at 653, there's a question at page 653 and the corrected sentence at AR 394, where the state of Georgia imposes sentence for this particular offense. There are 2 boxes to indicate whether the conviction was based on a negotiated plea or a non-negotiated plea, and both boxes are blank. The government didn't even show that a plea was at issue, and so it's very important that on this record in particular, that the police report cannot...
Although, counsel, as the government points out at page 388 of the record, the order of termination says, pursuant to an agreement between the district attorney's office and the defendant's counsel and agreed to by the court, the defendant's probation was to be terminated after 2 years from the date of sentence, et cetera, right?
Yes, but we don't know the contents of what he agreed to.
We don't know the content, but your argument was that there's no evidence that there was any plea agreement just now.
Well, let me... Even if the order is, we don't know the contents, and it's significant that the police report does not cure that defect.
All right. We thank both counsel for their helpful arguments, and this case will be submitted. The next case is United States versus Ford.